You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
The world is filled with many questions, such as, did giants exist?
What is junk DNA? Does it mean that you're trash?
Do you ever wonder if aliens have underwater bases in our oceans, and that's why there are so many UFO sightings off the coasts of islands all over the world?
How serious even is climate change, and when should we start building our rafts?
Hello, everyone. You may recognize me as Gabby from the History of Everything podcast.
And my name is Brenna, and you don't recognize me from anything yet.
Together, we're two scientists who explore the answers to these questions and many, many more in our new podcast,
Mystery of Everything,
available everywhere you get your podcasts.
Over 7 million different animals inhabit our planet.
In India, I met farmers whose crops have been literally washed away by historic flooding. In America, I've witnessed unprecedented droughts in California. In Greenland and in the Arctic, I was astonished to see that ancient glaciers are rapidly disappearing, well ahead of scientific predictions. All that I have seen and learned on my journey has absolutely terrified me.
So the question now is whether we will have the courage to act before it's too late. And how we answer will have a profound impact on the world that we leave behind, not just to you, but to your children and to your grandchildren. As a president, as a father, and as an American, I'm here to say we need to act.
We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Welcome to the All Creatures Podcast. This is Chris.
And I'm Angie.
And we're doing the news again.
Yes. I've been waiting for this day for a while now. There's so many stories happening right now in conservation, of course, mm-hmm. and animal conservation, our passion. So we're back, yes. And it feels good.
Yes, yes. Doing the news. I don't know why I always think of Anchorman when I think about doing the news. Maybe it's because I grew up in San Diego, but Will Ferrell.
It's a hilarious movie. It's a hilarious movie.
Yes, very good. Very good movie. No, so yeah, there's a lot going on. Sorry we've been away. We've been busy. You know, stuff will come out in a few weeks on what's been going on. Don't need to address it today, but we do have two species that we're going to be covering the next week, couple weeks. Angie and I are excited Halloween coming up.
Yes, it's going to be awesome. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, we got two really good ones coming.
We already did the burrowing owl last week, I think it's one of my new favorites. it's a lot of fun. Halloween, and owls are amazing.
They are in that one. You guys, if you have not listened to that one, please, please, please listen to that one, especially when Angie gets ready to play the rattlesnake sound. Oh my God. I listen to that like four times a day just to crack up. It's the best. It's
bloopers
the best.
Are always the best.
That one's the best.
There's shows just about bloopers, right?
Oh, that and the platypus when you're like, what species? We're halfway through recording and Angie's like, what species are we covering again?
My brain can only fit so many things in a day. And recording in the evening, it's about fried.
Yeah,
so
I know.
We'll see how we do. But it's fun. It's always fun. And with conservation, we often cover some heavy topics, which we will be today.
We're going to start with the bad stuff, right? I mean, we're going to start with the bad stuff today, and then we're going to end it on a great note. There's some good stuff out there, too.
Absolutely, yes. We'll educate and inform and then bring it all home. And that way, too, hopefully you'll have some solutions and ideas of what you can do to help animals and conservation as well.
Right. So you have bad news. Oh, no.
I do. And this one is just really tugs at my heartstrings because I am a bird nerd. And we just covered the burrowing owl last week.
Right.
And we have yet to do a citicene, which that's a fancy word for a parrot species.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
But it's been on my list, actually. I want to do the Puerto Rican parrot soon. But I read just 2 days ago and was exploring some articles that the stunning bright blue macaw species called the Spix macaw, which was adorned and really just made popular by the movie Rio. It's an animated movie about a bird, and it's a blue macaw, the Spix macaw. This species is now extinct in the wild, researchers believe.
No good.
A new study by BirdLife International, which is a great group. If you don't like them on Facebook, they'll keep you really informed. But anyways, they've reported that, yes, this the Spix macaw, which is the main character of the animated movie Rio, is no longer in the wild. However, there are some of these gorgeous and stunning flyers that live under human care, but they're just no longer found their natural habitat. So there's still hope for them. I mean, the different zoos and animal care facilities potentially could get together, and I don't know what the numbers are. I couldn't find the number living under human care, but there's a chance that perhaps through breeding that there could always be re-released or things like that. But it's just too bad because I'm a big fan of movies in general, especially animated cartoons about animals.
Right.
So fun. I can't wait till my boys get old enough to start introducing them to Lion King, and there's Rio will definitely be one of them. There's just so many classics out there. But I'm always hopeful that when we see some of these species in movies, that people love them more and want to help work towards saving them more. And this just goes to show that sometimes it's not the case, or maybe when people see animals played in as a cartoon animal, they don't really understand the real plight that's going on in the wild. And that could be argued for many species, lions, tigers, all of that.
It's the Amazon too. And, you know, we've talked about this, harpy eagle, the river dolphins. I mean, it's such a hot spot in the world that's being exploited by man. You know, slash and burn agriculture. And that's why, you know, we talk about ways to reduce meat consumption, things like that. So if we can decrease demand worldwide of meat products, especially, you know, beef and stuff like that, then there'll be less destruction, I guess. And there's a lot of other things going on down there too. So it's sad when you hear these Amazon animals.
Yeah.
You
know, going extinct. To be completely honest, I know, a lot about a few different species of citizens or parrots, but I don't really know a lot about the Spix macaw. And so we'll have to potentially cover them.
Do an episode. Yeah.
Yeah. In the future. So, we can learn more about them before it's too late and maybe get some more people interested in their plight here. Definitely perked my interest because they're just, Chris can put a picture on this show notes. They're just stunning. Yeah. I mean, blue is one of green's my favorite color. Blue is my second favorite color. So here's a bird just made up of these beautiful blues and kind of like teal colors.
They are blue. They are pretty. Well, let's keep, it reminds me of Jim Winepress. Hey, Jim, how you doing?
We miss you.
I know when you did the news, it was always negative. So I don't know why I just thought of you, but this one, you know, climate change and something Angie and I should be proud of in trying to reduce carbon emissions, because climate change is making the news, you know, the politics in the United States and now Brazil, you know, we were just talking about down there, you know, ignoring climate change. It's not okay. And this came out on a recent study that, and I'll just read the first byline is, the world's leading climate scientists have warned there's only a dozen years, so we have about 12 years, for global warming to be kept to a minimum of 1.5 degrees Celsius rise right now. We have 12 years to stop it. And then it will only go up to 1.5 degrees Celsius. If we keep doing what we're doing, I'm going to read this article further, we're going to go way past it. Because what the scientists are worried, if we go past that, then like even half a degree. So if we go from 1.5 to 2, which we're on a trajectory, I believe, to we're over 3 right now.
If we keep going the rate that we're going, correct.
Yeah, we will go over 3 degrees C in global temperature rise. If we only go from 1.5 to 2, the scientists, and these were, you know, hundreds of scientists doing this, only half a degree will worsen the risk of drought, floods, extreme heat, and poverty for hundreds of millions of people because of drought and all the things that could affect Sub-Sahara Africa, Asia, parts of South America.
Sure. I mean, Chris, we recently in Florida, yeah, we had a Hurricane Michael come through the Florida Gulf Coast mm-hmm. panhandle. And I think it was one of the, besides its historic size and devastation, but right. it was also one of the few times in October, this is towards the end of hurricane season here in Florida,
right.
that we've had mm-hmm. a hurricane like this make landfall, then let alone do the crazy amount of damage that this one did.
Oh, God. Like, yeah, it's St. Joseph's. I was just there last year.
Yeah, it's unprecedented.
It's gone. And it's gone. It's all unprecedented. Gone. Yeah.
And, of yeah. course, hurricanes throughout time have made landfall in the United States, mm-hmm. and they've done a lot of devastation, but typically not in October.
Yeah, and this big. If we let it go to 2 degrees C, it will probably wipe out all the coral reefs in the world because of acidification and everything it's doing to the oceans. So this is the line in the sand that they're saying, that the scientists say we have to do something. Right now, what we're seeing is global temperatures are already a degree C warmer. So again, like Angie just said, devastating hurricanes we're seeing. The droughts in Cape Town. Cape Town ran out of water. Forest fires are bigger. This study referenced 6,000 articles. 6,000.
Wow. I'm glad I didn't have to write that study.
Yeah. I know. Could you imagine? Oh my God.
I'm making a joke of it, but it is, I mean, that's a typical paper probably has like 50, 80, maybe.
Yes. Try to write out 6,000 references.
Yeah, I'm making light of it, but it shouldn't actually be because it just goes to show how much scientific literature is backing this evidence.
Yeah. Yeah, climate science deniers, like that, you just got to shake your head. It's happening. It's happening. It's happening. Other things they're worried about if we go to 2C, insects, which we all know are vital. They're going to estimate half the habitat will be gone for insects if we hit the 2 degrees C. 99% of corals lost. Like it's just crazy. And, you know, it's the United States and Brazil are the two right now that are fighting politically, you know, anything with climate change based on who's in office.
Sure.
Where the rest of the world is moving forward, which is good. China, bless China, because they're recognizing that they are a big polluter, like Beijing and stuff like that.
Pollution. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They are doing that. So what they say we have to do, we have to cut carbon pollution by 45% by 2030. That is right now what this study is showing. So the things that Angie and I are telling you to help reduce carbon emissions, please, please, please implement those. The more people around the earth that can do that, we will reach that goal.
Yes.
Right? You know, reducing our carbon footprint.
And for those of you in the United States, and I'm not sure what cycle in Brazil as far as voting people in and out of office, but we have a big election coming up here in the United States on November 6th. Where it's our midterm election, so there's room for a lot of change. So please mm-hmm. vote if you can, if you're a United States citizen, vote for mail, early vote. Now Uber is driving, right. Uber, the company that gives people, you know, it's like a taxi service, is giving mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. rides to the polls for free that day. My husband's going to drive people from either nursing homes or
that's awesome.
Wherever in our minivan that day.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So I think it's just, that's the thing is like there is, it seems to be this consensus of, I know there's in the United States, obviously there's people in power that are very pro mm-hmm. oil, pro fossil fuels,
yeah.
anti-climate change, if you will. But I almost feel like that's very, it's a very select few. They just have a lot of power and a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. the younger generation, myself included, see how I did that mm-hmm. there? I put myself in with those millennials.
No, yeah, we're young. We are spring chickens.
But if we get together.
You're straight out of college, Angie. You just graduated.
I am. I just graduated. Thank you, Chris. That's why we're buddies. But if we all come together with our collective voice, I really, and maybe it's a circle I run with, the people I surround myself mm-hmm. around, but there's not a lot of people that are like, yeah, let's ruin the world for my kids.
Yeah.
Like, I don't yeah. see anybody saying that. So if there's any comments and solutions that people have or minor law changes like banning plastic bags mm-hmm. or whatever it is, I feel like yeah. if they're reasonable, yeah. people will get behind them. And right. I definitely know that it might be the older fuddy duds. No offense, mm-hmm. or
I'm you don't even want to know. When I was with my mom and dad, and I was like, oh my God, you guys are so horrible for the planet. And my mom was laughing. She's like, what are we doing? I'm like, you have the smallest water bottles,
those darn water bottles.
They use straws like crazy. I'm like, mom, I'm telling people not to do this. And I walk into your house and they're everywhere.
I mean, just drink water from the tap as long as you live in a safe city.
It's just as clean.
Oh my goodness. But so I think there's a certain age where people, it's just very hard for them to change their ways. And that's fine. The younger generation is going to come up and do their best and do their part. And that, I mean, that's the thing is I feel like high school and younger, these kids are ready. I wish they could.
Green. They're
like,
green.
They are green. They are ready to tackle the world and help save our mess. And I mm-hmm. know they're going to do it, but we, the middle generation and our older generation, need to help them out. And encourage that. It was super charming. My four and a half year old, he went with his dad to get ice cream down the road from where we live. And when he got there, he told his dad that he wanted to get the ice cream in a ceramic cup. A reusable, because it's like a coffee store too. Instead of like styrofoam. Like, why styrofoam? And so, and of course we work with our kids a lot, but John didn't prompt this or anything. This was just natural.
Yeah, it's
awesome.
And
he said, he's like, Xander. And he's like, well, daddy, I just don't want to see, there's no reason for that container to go into he called it a trash hill or a trash mountain.
Yeah, trash hill. Mountain. Yeah, trash mountain.
Like,
yeah.
Or end up, he's like, even worse, end up in an ocean. And so if he can figure that out at like 4.5 years old, I don't understand why, you know, everybody can't figure it out. And so, but it was very hopeful because, you know, I worry about my children. I worry about myself, more so worry about my children or potential future grandchildren what do they always say? The good old saying that we don't inherit the earth from our ancestors, we borrow it from our children. Mm-hmm. And I think we haven't really lived by that. Or people in politics.
No,
people in big policy, big money.
Don't.
And, but at least in the U.S. and a lot of other countries around, you can vote for change and vote for a cleaner planet. So
and it's catching wind. I mean, it's catching wind around the earth. This year's been big, I think. And I don't know if it's so much, you know, you and I just keeping the pulse of it, but I think when we see the garbage patch being discussed and cleaning that up, plastics becoming a big deal, single-use plastics.
I went on a girls' weekend in the hotel we stayed at. They brought us up straws and they were paper straws.
Yeah. Yeah.
So little things like that where I just wouldn't even start. That's going to become the norm again, hopefully. And although these reports, if you read them, there are a lot of doom and gloom. And trust me, there's some days that I just want to throw my hands up in the air and just kind of start.
Especially with two kids.
Well, go take my boys to Boy Scouts and learn survival skills. Yeah. I feel like they might need them in the next 20 or 30 years. Then again, as I look around and read and educate myself, there's a ton of people that are just as horrified or more horrified by this recent study than Chris or myself. For instance, mm-hmm. my buddy, who's not really my buddy. He's my dream buddy, Leonardo DiCaprio, the conservation crush. DiCaprio Foundation is making great strides for all things conservation, animals, planet, people, making lives better. And they're definitely on a mission to help keep the global climate change rise at 1.5 or below. And this group has a subsidiary group called Missing Pathways to 1.5C. You can check them out online through his foundation. Mm-hmm. And this is basically an unprecedented movement of conservation groups, faith-based organizationists, and of course scientists that have launched major reports and studies to show how if they can transform the land sector, they can help slow down this carbon in the air. And they have like a lot of different suggestions on how to do it. And one of it's actually saving and or giving back land to a lot of the indigenous and native peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
another is restoring ecosystems that have, of course, been devastated throughout generations, and then improving management of whatever native forests are left. And also this group, Missing Pathways, is focusing a lot on agroecology. So how to basically merge mm-hmm. agriculture and ecology together in a sustainable way. So
right.
You have to have a farm, but you put some trees on it, or you keep some trees when you clear the land, or you do some replanting. And so they're working mm-hmm. on different ideas with that and how to do that, because obviously the more trees we keep around, that mm-hmm. clearly helps us fight off this excess carbon, because
600, Angie, I need 600 trees to offset my carbon footprint. I remember doing that earlier.
Well, let's get started. I mean, it's almost, what do you want for Christmas, Chris?
Johnny Appleseed. Johnny Appleseed.
I mean, and that's, and we're a little early for Christmas, but those are things to start thinking about over the holidays.
That's true.
Instead of giving all this junk, like
plastics.
I
know,
as I buy my kids all this plastic stuff, I'm like, I try not to buy any of that new stuff. I like to go to either resale shops or, inherit it from a friend or reuse it. Things like that, because it's like everything I look at, I'm like, oh, this is just going to be in a landfill soon.
Mm-hmm.
But a tree, like if I planted, John and his brother, they planted one of their Christmas trees.
Right.
Many years ago. I will not say the years. Him and his brother Dan. It was Dan's Christmas tree. He picked it out and they planted it in the front yard. And that thing is now amazing.
Huge. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Time I go visit their childhood home, I hear the story about it. And do you think that they remember any little car that they got?
No.
Maybe they had a dump truck they used to enjoy. So
I miss my Star Wars toys, because those would be worth a ton of money.
worth a ton of
money
them?
Today.
Did you open them?
I don't care. My
G.I.
Joes.
That much money. Maybe. There's definitely some of those things. But yeah, think about that. Like this tree. So I always try to do it either for Father's Day or some holiday.
Yeah, it's smart.
Do a tree, and then, who knows if we'll live in this house forever, but it's still there and it has meaning. And so I don't know if I'm not going to get to 600 this year.
I gotta start planting. Well, let's switch gears to a little bit more fun news. And this one was really cool. So the North Carolina Zoo is involved with the International Space Station. They're doing a project. It's called Icarus, and it's the International Cooperation for Animal Research Using Space. So one of the things we've talked about, it's amazing. One of the things we talked about is technology. One of the things I think Jesse and I talked about, I think you and I talked about, I think even Jim and I talked about it. I remember with Jesse, I talked about AI, them using AI to look at photos at camera traps, and AI can count camera trap photos like within, an hour versus thousands of hours of humans looking through it.
Yeah, efficient.
And then we go back to Dr. Kim Goetz, I think, tracking blue whales, right? She was using that and talked a little bit about their tracking thing. Well, what the zoo's doing, and what's amazing in this, is they're using animal tracking with their kudu. And so the astronauts up at the International Space Station have deployed the antenna, and they basically just have an ear tag in the kudu, and it's like 5 grams. It's really, really small. So the reason that's better is because our tracking like studies that are going on around the Earth right now with scientists that use satellites, the collars are much heavier, much, much heavier and bigger because the satellites are farther away. So when you put a satellite into orbit, it's way, way up there. The space station's in low Earth orbit.
Oh.
So you get a, you don't need it as powerful as a, you know, a big collar. So these are actually lighter, easier on the animals. And so they're testing this out. And again, the information that they're using can help track and save wild populations. I remember reading a study years ago when they used it with elephants, and the elephant one, they have the huge collar with the heavy thing. And they were tracking these migrating elephants to see where they went to prevent human wildlife conflict, right? Mm-hmm. To kind of better understand where they go. So again, technology helping species, it's a lot of good stuff coming. And, you know, kudos to the North Carolina Zoo using their...
Oh, kudos for kudu. Yeah.
Kudos. There you go. I was trying to get there. You're way better than I am with the puns. So, you know, shout out to them. That was really cool. I thought that was amazing. And again, working with the International Space Station, with conservation.
Well, yeah. And I know that a lot of studies too with the collars, I mean, I think some of those collars can be several hundred dollars and then the animals lose mm-hmm, them or mm-hmm. they don't fit right. So mm-hmm. if they could do it with just a little tag, that would be probably very much more efficient, more cost saving. So yeah, right. Zoos helping animals in the wild. Gotta love it.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep. And in space. I love it.
And North Carolina is beautiful and I would totally live there.
Yeah. And Angie needs a job. So
and I need a job. Anybody out there in the research triangle? Let's see.
All right there with you. All right. So you said something about a whale?
I did. Yes. So recent news, just a few days ago, a story popped up about a narwhal, which we have yet to cover on the pod, but it's definitely on the books.
On the radar.
Yeah. The unicorn of the whale species, right?
Yes.
But a narwhal, a solo narwhal, was hanging with a group of belugas. And a lot of people are probably familiar with beluga whales from the popular show Finding Dory.
Oh, yeah.
Where there was Bailey.
Bailey, yeah, that's my 3-year-old's favorite. He mm-hmm. loves that movie.
They would send out echolocation with her head. Pretty cool stuff. Yeah. But anyway,
Bailey was a boy. Narwhal. He was a boy. He was a boy. I'll correct you. Bailey was a boy.
You should correct me. I still haven't watched a ton of these movies because my kids are just coming.
Yeah, they're getting there. They're getting there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the story goes that the scientists that work for the nonprofit group for research and education on marine mammals, an acronym is GREM, recently saw this where there's a pod of 10 young male belugas in the St. Lawrence estuary near basically Quebec, Canada.
Right.
And lo and behold, hanging out with the crew with the young dudes is this narwhal, right? This cool unicorn of the sea. Yeah. And it's a gray speckled narwhal, and it has a single twisted tusk,
right,
which is an extension of a tooth. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We haven't covered that yet, but I think I learned that from wild krats.
Right. I know. Yeah.
But researchers really aren't sure why this guy is traveling with a pod of belugas. Because narwhals, they are social creatures, and they usually are found in groups with other female, like females run with females, males run with males, and then of course moms and cats go together. So they're definitely on a social scale. But
I can just see the cartoon about that, like the Far Side, like invited this guy or something, you know, just something funny about that.
Yeah. But the behaviors seem very normal. They seem playful. There's no aggression. The belugas don't seem to be bothered by his big pointy
tusk. It's like, watch out for that thing.
Yeah. But it is puzzling to researchers. And they don't really understand too, because narwhals and researchers are also a little puzzled about the communication between the two species, because interestingly enough, belugas are referred to as the canaries of the sea because they have such a diverse acoustic repertoire. So that,
right.
I really, now I'm like, my curiosity is, we got to cover those guys soon. But yeah, so they don't know, but they can see them interacting through bubble blowing and just doing this similar behavior. So they think they can communicate, but they don't actually know the extent.
Right.
And so there's, there's theories out
like,
there.
I bet they just call him like, it's Gary, you know, what's Gary doing?
Man? I know.
Well, Luca's like,
the other thing is it's a lot further south than a narwhal would typically be. But researchers are pondering, well, maybe there's not that many narwhals left. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head. And so now they're forced to look for friends or further than they should.
In our next four species, let's cover narwhal.
We'll just,
I think we should
learn
cover
more about them.
I mean,
because I don't know how many are left. Yeah. And so, yeah, maybe they're heading south to find friends because they can't find friends or mates where they're at. They're just, you know, researchers just are not sure. But
yeah, it makes me really want to learn more about
them. Yeah, but and we talked earlier on the podcast about technology, and I think it's really cool to note that this was actually all observed because the GREM scientists that found this, they actually used drones to observe about 900 belugas in this area.
That's crazy.
From the St. Lawrence Estuary to a fjord in Quebec, Canada. So
is that how you say it in Michigan? Quebec, not Quebec.
No.
You know, you too late. You raised it like five times. I'm like,
no. Well, and actually, I might be mistaken. I'm not sure. Is it St. Lawrence?
I think so.
Because this was seen in St. Lawrence.
Ask
I don't
Danielle.
Know
she would know. Near. She's from Toronto.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, where's Danny? Yeah. Man, our Canadian fans are not going
to Quebec.
And fair enough.
Well, they don't like Quebec.
And I don't know where the St. Lawrence Estuary is.
My friend William, he's a French Canadian, but yeah, I don't think any of the other Canadians like the French Canadians. So we're not going to go there, not starting World War III up there. We love our Canadian listeners. I love Canada.
No, I love it. I actually have never been, I'll say it right. I've never been to Quebec or, I have been to Toronto, yes, I have not been. Nor have I been to British Columbia.
That's the best. I was just telling somebody, like, you know, New Zealand's pretty, but my God, no, British Columbia is the prettiest place on earth, period. Vancouver Island is
just. That's what I've heard. So the girls that I was doing the girl weekend with were kind of tossing around maybe Calgary. Next time, however many years from now we're able to actually get people to watch our kids.
But that's not British Columbia. That's nowhere. Go to Vancouver. Vancouver's British Columbia.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, you're just failing the Canadians today, Angie.
Yeah.
I'm glad you didn't say Mexico City. We're going to go to...
So Calgary, that's over one more.
It's like Alberta, isn't it? Yeah,
Alberta.
Yeah,
Alberta.
Yeah.
You're right. But I would do... We talked about... Just so you know, we did talk about Vancouver.
Oh, Vancouver's gorgeous. Calgary, and Victoria, across the sound.
A dual trip.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, if I was that far... over and west, up, yeah. I would want to do both.
Oh, it's beautiful.
How do you pick which one's better?
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's beautiful. All right. Let's go with good news. This one was good. And I've got to give kudos to the Nepal's Department of National Parks and Wildlife Conservation. And I think we talked about this in the leopard episode, if I remember right, but I know I was reading a study about snow leopards and how Nepal has really stood up and started protecting snow leopards, working with the local people. Well, this came out National Geographic, September 26, 2018. So a few weeks ago, but we haven't done this in a while. But scientists estimate there are now 235 wild Bengal tigers, and that's a huge leap from 2009 when there was only 120.
Whoa,
so, yeah,
that's great news, Chris.
Yeah, they're rebounding big time there. And Nepal is doing a lot to protect them. They basically what they use, again, camera traps using technology, then some statistical modeling to estimate that the tigers there are on the rebound. And what they're doing is they know human wildlife conflicts. So they're sending, you know, setting up this preserves, you know, so the tigers have been extending out. What was really cool about this was they more observed about the behavior and the cub behavior. And they were saying that they really can see that it's a healthy population because the cubs are playing a lot.
Aww.
And what that indicates
to
them,
that
Yeah, I know. Is that the parents are healthy. There's more energy. The cubs are fed well, and they have more energy to play and be rambunctious. So they said that's really, really good sign. There's only about 4,000 tigers left in the world. Again, the species we'll cover at some point, in the next, few months, I'm sure tigers will pop up there at some point. But that's good news. Nepal's doing a great job. And again, that's given us the blueprint, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And especially to do it with such a large mega carnivore too, that needs land. And so, if you can do it, and because think of all the other species below, lower than the tigers, they probably are also protecting, right? So,
well, they said sloth bears, they have the greater one-horned rhino, great hornbills, sambar deer, Asian elephants, all in that area. So, when you start doing things like this, it's going to affect more than one species, right?
Yes. Oh, I'd love it. That's great news, Chris.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. That was good.
And my lovely news comes about my favorite, the Grevy's zebra. Zebra.
Yeah.
You can pronounce it differently depending on where you're from.
Grevy.
And of course, the Grevy's zebra.
Quebec.
The Grevy's zebra is the three of the largest species. They're found in Kenya right now. Historically, they're up in Ethiopia as well. But there's only about, they estimate about 2,500, 25 to 28, depends.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
And a lot of that's been through great efforts. One of my dream places to go on my bucket list soon is Lewa Conservancy in Kenya, to see them and hang out with the Samburu people there. And of course, the Lewa Conservation Group that does amazing things. And so great news was announced that an endangered Grevy's zebra, a filly, a little female, was born at the Marwell Zoo in Hampshire, UK. So it might be Hampshire, UK, at the Marwell Zoo.
Hampshire.
I wish I had an English accent. Gosh, that would be amazing. Anyways,
you have your Michigan accent. It's all right.
I love my roots, so go green, go white. It's amazing. The little filly has been yet to be named, but she's very healthy and her mom is being a great mom. And so, this is a really awesome addition to the zoo because, the Marwell Zoo does a lot to help out in conservation overseas in Africa. So this is like a great new addition to help kind of document and demonstrate to the public what all that they are doing in the wild and that these animals should be conserved in the wild.
I was just going to say, we got to do Grevy soon. I know you're dying to do Grevy soon.
It's like my baby. I know. We've even had a few requests for it and we will do it as we're at about our year mark at this point. So we're just hitting our groove, people. Stick around, and you are gonna see. We're gonna have species that are gonna change your life.
Yes.
And the Grevy's will be one of them. And people probably a lot of people don't associate zebras with being endangered because they see a whole bunch of them when they watch Blue Planet during the migration.
Yeah, but plain zebra.
That's where it comes in that there are three different species, distinct species, and that one of them is critically endangered.
Yes. No, they're definitely on our list. Narwhal's going to be there very, 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 very soon. All right. So discovery of a new species. This one is really pretty and it's a new fish that they found off Brazil and they named it Tocinides aphrodite. And this thing is gorgeous. It is green, yellow, and bright pink. It is amazing. So they found it about 400 feet down, off one of the archipelagos there. It's just a beautiful fish. Obviously, there's so many more species we need to discover, but I just saw this one and it was wow. Just wow. Gorgeous. Hopefully we keep the reefs
oceans,
around.
People. Yeah.
I know.
I love snorkeling and diving and it wouldn't be any fun to do that if there weren't beautiful species. Well, obviously, you wouldn't.
This thing, this thing's amazing. That. Like, it's people got to go to the show notes. Yeah, people got to go to the short. They said exploring the deep sea coral reefs nearly 400 feet underwater.
Amazing.
St. Paul Rocks. Yeah. So it's pretty, it's pink and yellow. Yeah, it's beautiful, beautiful.
Oh, well, it sounds like we were on the bright color tip this, this okay. looking new species. But I have to report on today that scientists, the scientists have discovered a hot pink.
Okay.
Wait for it. Yeah. Swamp eel.
Oh, God. Where's this thing from?
Right?
Yeah.
This is the new hot pink swamp eel, which might be my new band that
yeah,
I released.
Yeah.
Its name.
That's funny.
Was discovered in the Khasi Hills of, was discovered in the Khasi Hills of Meghala, India. So in
oh, wow.
India. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the researchers were actually looking for freshwater fish. So it was in this beautiful, mm-hmm. like woodsy, kind of mountainous, green, beautiful area. They were looking for new right. species of fish and digging. And they were also looking for like legless amphibians that are sometimes mm-hmm. known to be in these swamp waters near the fresh stream.
Right,
but instead they unearthed this creature that they're calling Monopteris rongsaw.
Okay.
Which is hot pink and it's blind. And
that's crazy.
And like other swamp eels, it's lives terrestrially and is blind and has sharp teeth. So
why would it be pink? I think it's got to be because bright colors in nature is usually a warning sign, right? So the physiologists in us, you see this bright pink eel.
The answer is actually more simple than that, Chris.
Okay. You tell me.
Yeah. So it basically lacks pigmentation.
Okay.
So it gets this hot pink color from its dense network of blood vessels just below the skin.
Mm. Okay.
So, okay. Yeah.
So maybe it just didn't need, it's probably in a deep, dark thing, so it doesn't really matter,
maybe,
right?
Maybe, mean, but
it
that's, just,
yeah, it has
right,
no
and that's,
skin pigment.
It
yeah.
could be something like you said too, like, yeah, who knows? But it's really cool.
That's crazy.
And it's definitely hot pink swamp eel and new species mm-hmm, discovered mm-hmm. out of India. And this was a group of scientists from London's Natural History Museum, which I've been to, which is fantastic. So
it's one I gotta go
yeah,
to. Yeah,
kudos to them and this cool swamp eel.
Awesome. Well, it just reminds me, this week we posted a hilarious evolution. That thing cracked me up with the giraffe.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
Like, and tree. I mean, it would have been perfect if I found it 2 weeks ago, but oh, my God, it's so funny. The tree keeps getting taller. So if you haven't seen that, go to our Facebook page. Like us on Facebook if you can. We appreciate it. We will be back on Tuesday with a new fun species. This one's
super
really
fun,
unique.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then as we get ready for Halloween.
It's gonna be fun.
All right. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening.